Conservative? You bet. Controversial? Right again. It's time to squabble on the Jim Benson Show.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Jim Benson Show, conservative talk radio covering the issues that concern you here on the BBS Radio Network. Well, it's certainly nice to have more good news to report for a change. The all-important Arizona 2020 election audit has uncovered loads of irregularities and outright fraud, most likely, far more than enough to establish that Joe Biden won the state fraudulently and illegitimately. Those in charge of the election in Arizona's Maricopa County, with its dominant population that decides elections, have been and continue to be adamantly opposed to the audit ordered by the state Senate and fighting it tooth and nail every step of the way. If the election was so free and fair, as these people keep insisting, what are they so afraid of? Well, obviously, they're afraid of getting caught at election fraud. And, of course, those are criminal penalties if they are convicted. But no one's even been charged so far. We'll go over some of the preliminary findings of the Arizona State Senate's audit, and you'll hear discussions of some of these findings. But it's also significant that the state and county election officials, Democrats and Republicans, are still whining that the audit is a waste of time and that they are free of any guilt or incompetence in this election fiasco. But what's been discovered so far is plainly damning of these claims. Let the American public see what's been uncovered and judge for themselves. And Arizona election officials still, despite a court order, are refusing to turn over routers which should trace and show where unauthorized hacking of voting machines came from, like maybe communist China, Iran, elsewhere in the U.S. They are also refusing to turn over what's called Splunk logs, which are backups to illegally deleted security logs for voting equipment and images of ballot envelopes, which would further demonstrate whether ballots were illegal or not. As to what has been discovered thus far, it appears, contrary to the claims of election authorities, that many thousands of paper ballots were printed illegally on paper other than the so-called vote-safe paper, which is required, thus making their authenticity highly questionable and the possibility of their being fraudulently produced highly likely. Here are some of the audit discoveries. There were 74,243 mail-in ballots received and counted than were mailed out. That is, there were 74,243 more mail-in ballots received and counted than were mailed out. There were 11,326 votes from voters who were not on the voter rolls on November 7th, a few days after Election Day, that then showed up on voter rolls on December 4th, 2020. Additionally, there were 3,981 voters were allowed to vote in violation of a state Supreme Court ruling issued prior to the election. And 18,000 voters were removed from the voter rolls right after the election. Wonder why that was. This means there are at least more than 107,000 fraudulent votes, almost certainly, that were cast in the November 2020 election in Arizona than in a state that Joe Biden won by something like 11,000 votes. You can bet that the vast majority of these fraudulent votes were for Biden. So the battle over election integrity goes on in Arizona and the rest of the nation. We all have long suspected massive fraud in these six key swing states, of which Arizona is one, that decided the election, not to mention in much of the rest of the nation. Just as we suspected that the Democrats and their rhino, that is Republicans in name only, allies running these elections, would be loudly protesting and fighting these real and full forensic audits every step of the way. In Georgia, a citizen election integrity organization known as VoterGA.org run by Garland Favarino, has just announced they have proof of election fraud in at least one county there, and efforts to proceed with a wider forensic election audit in the state are proceeding and appear now to be largely unstoppable. Short of a Bolshevik-style revolution and takeover of our country, the danger of which is something we must all not discount. You'll also hear some chilling words toward the end of the program about the great danger we as a nation and civilization are facing from those behind this coup that stole the election, and the high level of infiltration and corruption by the political left in our government. Efforts are also underway in these real full forensic election audits in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, as I understand it, though the battles there will be more uphill with the Democrat, that is, communist-leaning, governors in those states. To start out with our sound bites for today's program, let's listen to Fox's Tucker Carlson on his Tucker Carlson Tonight Show, I believe it was July 10, reading from writings by a podcaster named Daryl Cooper about why so many Americans believe the 2020 election was rigged. I believe it's stated that this, either by Carlson or elsewhere on the internet, that this, in reviews of it, that this is a great synopsis, sums up perfectly about why people suspect the election was fraudulent. I think there's a lot more to it, actually, but it's a very good piece. Let's listen to it.
Play sound by one, please. Yesterday, an historian and podcaster called Daryl Cooper wrote a remarkable series of tweets in which he tried to explain why so many Trump voters believe the last election was rigged. Really smart. He crystallized it. We'd like to read some of it now. Quote, here are the facts, actual confirmed facts that shape the perspective of Trump voters. The FBI spied on the 2016 Trump campaign using evidence manufactured by the Clinton campaign. We now know that all involved knew it was fake from day one. The voters this was aimed at are Tea Party people, the type who give their kids a pocket constitution for their birthday and have founding fathers' memes in their bios. The intel community spying on a presidential campaign using fake evidence, including forged documents, is a big deal to them. Trump supporters know the collusion case front and back. They went from worrying the collusion must be real to suspecting it might be fake to realizing it was a scam, and then watched as every institution, the intel agencies, the press, Congress, academia, gaslit them for another year. Worse, collusion was used to scare away good people from working in the Trump administration. They knew their entire lives would be investigated. Many quit because they were being bankrupted by legal fees. The DOJ, the press, and the government destroyed lives and actively subverted an elected administration. This is where people whose political identity was largely defined by a naive belief in what they learned in civics class began to see the outline of a regime that had crossed all institutional boundaries. That regime stepped out of the shadows to unite against an interloper, Donald Trump. A lot of Trump supporters understand this regime is not partisan. They know that the same institutions would have taken opposite sides if it was a Tulsi Gabbard versus Jeb Bush election. It's hard to describe to people on the left how shocking and disillusioning this was for conservatives, people who encourage their sons to enlist in the army and hate those who don't stand for the anthem. They could have managed the shock if it only involved the government. But the behavior of the corporate press is what really radicalized them. They hate journalists more than they hate any politician or government official because they feel most betrayed by them. The idea that the press is driven by ratings and sensationalism became untenable. If that were true, they'd be all over the Epstein story. But they're not. The corporate press is the propaganda arm of the regime. Nothing anyone says will ever make them unsee that, period. This is profoundly disorienting. Many Trump voters don't know for certain whether ballots were faked in November 2020, but they know for absolute certain that the press, the FBI, and the rest would lie to them if they were. They watched the press behave like animals for 4 years. Tens of millions of people will always see Brett Kavanaugh as a gang rapist based on nothing because of CNN. And CNN seems proud of that. CNN led a lynch mob against a high school kid. They cheered on a summer of riots. Republicans always claimed the media had liberal bias, but they still thought the press would admit the truth if they were cornered. Huh. It's a very different thing to watch the media invent stories out of whole cloth in order to destroy regular people's lives and spark mass violence. Time magazine has told us that during the 2020 riots, there were weekly conference calls, involving, among others, leaders of the protest, the local officials who refused to stop them, and media people who framed them for political effect. In Ukraine, we call that a color revolution. Throughout the summer, Democratic governors took advantage of COVID to change voting procedures. It wasn't just the mail-in ballots. They lowered signature matching standards and a lot else. Then there was Hunter Biden's laptop. Big tech ran a full-on censorship campaign against a major newspaper to protect a political candidate. Period. Everyone knows it. All of the tech companies now admit it was a mistake, but the election's over, so who cares? It goes without saying that if the New York Times had Don Jr.'s laptop, which is full of pictures of him smoking crack and engaging in group sex with lots of lurid family drama, emails describing direct corruption, the New York Times would not have been banned. Think back. Stories about Trump being urinated on by Russian prostitutes and blackmailed by Putin were promoted as fact when the only evidence was a document paid for by his opposition and disavowed by its source. The New York Post was banned for reporting on true information. The reaction of Trump people to all of this was not, no fair. That's how they felt about, say, Romney's Binders of Women story in 2012. This is different. Now they see, correctly, that every institution is captured by people who will use any means to exclude them from the political process. And yet they still showed up in record numbers to vote. Trump got 13 million more votes than he did in 2016. He got 10 million more than Clinton got. As election night dragged on, his voters allowed themselves some hope. But when the four critical swing states, and only those states, went dark at midnight, they knew. Over the ensuing weeks, they got shuffled around by grifters and media scam artists selling them conspiracy theories. They latched on to one, then another increasingly absurd theory as they tried to put a concrete name on something very real. Media and tech did everything to make things worse. Everything about the election was strange, the changes to procedure, unprecedented mail-in voting, the delays, etc. But rather than admit that and make everything transparent, they banned discussion of it, even in direct messages. Everyone knows that, just as Don Jr.'s laptop would have been the story of the century. If everything about this election dispute was the same except the parties were reversed, suspicions about the outcome would have been taken very seriously. See 2016 for proof. They understand why courts refuse to take the election case. What judge will stick his neck out for Donald Trump, knowing that he'll be destroyed in the media as a violent mob burns down his house? It is a fact, according to Time magazine, that mass riots were planned in cities across the country if Trump won. Sure, they were protests, but they were planned by the same people as during the summer, and everyone knows what that would have meant. Judges have families, too. Forget the ballot conspiracies. It's a fact that governors used COVID to unconstitutionally alter election procedures, something the Constitution states that only legislatures can do, to help Biden make up for a massive enthusiasm gap by gaming the mail-in ballot system. They knew it was unconstitutional when they did it. It's right there in plain English in the Constitution. But they also knew the cases wouldn't see court until after election. What judge is going to toss millions of ballots because a governor broke the rules? The threat of mass riots wasn't implied, it was direct. And he goes on. In the end, Darrell Cooper writes, not every theory about election fraud is true, but Trump's voters, quote, are absolutely right that their government is monopolized by a regime that believes they are beneath representation and will observe no limits to keep them getting it. End quote. That is true, and every honest person knows it.
Mass riots were planned in cities across the nation if Trump won. You see how much danger the country, all of us, are in. Now, he says there were four swing states that went dark at midnight. That is, stopped counting the votes late on election day or early next morning. Then a few hours after that, Biden suddenly surged ahead, winning the election. I thought this happened in five or perhaps six of the key swing states, all of the key six swing states, I believe. Well, anyway, you'll hear discrepancies like this in these recordings based on misstatements or interpretations of what's happened or the perspective of who's presenting them. But the basic facts remain. Now let's hear another perspective on the situation in Arizona from President Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. who talks about what's happened there and in other states in an appearance on former Trump advisor Steve Bannon's America's Voice News radio program, July 19. Play soundbite two, please.
Let's bring in Rudy. So, Rudy, the question is, you're the one that started. You stood in the breach and didn't turn on the president. That Mike Pence has got an article today in Politico saying Mike Pence is flatlining his political career. You stood tall in the breach. Tell us, given where we started, where we are today with this now exploding all over the country, how do you think we're doing and where do you think this heads?
Well, I think Arizona is going to be, you can't really dispute it. The numbers and the categories are sufficient to really change the election. I mean, we're talking about at least 200,000. It's probably going to end up being more illegal votes, clearly illegal. You've got about 60 or 70,000, which we always thought were there, pieces of paper that were not official paper. Well, that's going to be true in Georgia. That's going to be true big time in Pennsylvania. Essentially, what happened was they had to make up ballots because Trump was winning. So the reason they were asking for the Sharpie pens or whatever, because the experts found that about 78,000, I think that's the number, of the paper in Maricopa County is totally phony paper. It's totally different than the paper that was official that was sent out. It's not even been folded, and it looks like it's marked with the same Sharpie. So I don't know what else you need. That 78,000 when the margin was 10 or 11,000. You've got votes by people who weren't registered on election day. I mean, what that really means? They're really in large measure. If you go out and investigate, these aren't really people. This is what you do when you slip in phony ballots, and then you got to assign it to somebody. So they had 18,000 voted and were removed after election day. They probably found out they had 18,000 people that didn't exist. So they wanted to get those out before the audit. Then they had 11,326 that were not on rolls on November 7, but were on December 4. Well, if you're not on the rolls on November 7, you can't vote. But they probably did vote, but they had no registration assigned to them. So between then and December 4, the crooked Democrats assigned them to a phony registration. They gave them a name. But I mean, the total one that decides the whole thing is 74,243 mail-in ballots with no evidence of ever being sent. Now, that's a euphemistic way of saying those are ballots that were made out by Democratic operatives.
Rudy, just hang on. We're gonna bring you back right after the break. By the way, this is why it's the canvas, not the count. This is why Merrick Garland's been implying criminal penalties. The Democrats had these overwhelming victories. Why are they not putting forward the evidence to help this out? You know why? They got caught.
Okay, now let's hear some excerpts from election fraud warrior, founder and former CEO of Overstock.com, Patrick Byrne, on what's been happening in the Arizona election audit. These are from Byrne's speech July 18 in Anaheim, California, at Clay Clark's. Please play soundbite three.
Let's go to the Arizona server. They have acknowledged the server was breached that had unauthorized access. They won't reveal the routers. Now, they're saying they won't release the routers, which are in the subpoena, because we'll be able to see where those unauthorized breaches came from. And if they came from, say, Xi'an, China, then that's problematic. But they won't release the routers. They have forgotten who's the principal and who's the agent, that we hire them to conduct a task for us. Let's go to the next one. Oh, here's another one. The security logs were erased on March 5th after the subpoenas were issued. They were flushed out. Fortunately, there's a backup log system for all these computer systems. It's called Splunk. They're refusing to give access to the backup log system for everything. Again, forgetting who they really work for. Let's go to the next one. So what was outlined was a list of things that just in themselves came to 107,000 votes, but it's really I mean, here's some more. There's 11,000 votes that were there on, they were not in the rolls on November 7th. On December 4th, they show up in the rolls, and they show up as having voted on November 3rd. So they voted November 3rd, they weren't in the rolls November 7th, and they reappeared. There's another 18,000 who voted on November 3rd and disappeared from the rolls the next day. They wiped them off the rolls. And on, let's go to the next one. So these all add up. The bottom line is, based on the computer forensics, there is no way in his right mind anyone should have put their signature and signed off on the Maricopa. They're out of their mind. Out of their mind. I mean, it's just gotten silly. It's really silly. So the next one, this is what you can do. Mike Flynn and I have launched this called the America Project. Take out your phone, text the word USA to the number 84576. It was built for you. It was built. We say it's the project to save America, but it's really the project to help American citizens save America. It was built by a 3-star general and myself, a legend in military intelligence, and myself. It's built for you so you can push back. We know that these guys have made it tough to push back. We are behind so many of the activities going on around the country. And we've been feeding and nurturing and bringing this movement to life everywhere. And when the goons show up, we're the ones that are pulling together mass, forming our own mass movement of Moms for America and Latinos for America and Blacks for America and citizens like you, Christians, the vets. We are the ones who are getting in touch with all these groups and pulling, doing some of the rights never really done well, which is have our different groups, but, you know, the Republican Party is a mess. Don't give a penny to them, please. If you want to help, there's a reason Mike Flynn and I are doing this. This is to save America, and we built it so you can save America. It's a built for your needs to push back. So
I don't agree with Burns' desire that you should never again give a penny to the Republican Party. They are the vanguard, the political party, which is going to carry us through this if we are able to be successful. But he's entitled to his opinion. Again, though, if you want to join and or contribute to Burn and retired General Mike Flynn's The America Project, which is at the forefront of the election integrity battles across the country, take your phone and text USA to 84576. And now let's hear some audio from another election fraud warrior, MyPillow.com CEO Mike Lindell, who also spoke at the same Reawaken America tour in Anaheim. Play soundbite 4, please.
So what I did on the morning of the 4th, on November 4th, I started digging in myself mathematically into counties and stuff from my home state of Minnesota, especially Wisconsin. I dug into Wisconsin. I looked at Arizona. Nothing made sense. We were in the twilight zone for a week, about 2 weeks, and then it led to 2 months, a month, 5 months. You know, we're still there, I guess. But back then it was as we rolled into November and everybody had high hopes of December 14th because everybody knew. I called it organic theft. Everybody heard like Michigan, 100,000 votes in Michigan and Wisconsin in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. Well, what did the media convince you of? They convinced you, oh, that darn mail-in voting, Biden, you know, they vote Democrat in the cities. Well, did you know that those votes, the mail-in voting votes were counted the morning of the 3rd? Not in the middle of the night on the 4th. Those votes, you know, that was all, there were just lies. This big lie was one lie after another. But I'm here to tell you all of that happened. And if the legislators would have done their job, if they would have pulled this election down on the 14th of December, we would be in a lot of trouble because we would have never found out about the cyber attack and the machines. And I'm telling you, This is the miracle we're looking at. That's the first miracle. Well, there's actually a few miracles here. The first miracle was that Donald Trump, in spite of how they had, they set these machines, the algorithms, in spite of that, he got so many votes because we all got behind him. They underpredicted him by 10 million votes, easy. So that raised up all, they had to stop everything, and that was all the deviations that got raised up to, okay? Second miracle is that nobody did their job. All the legislatures, they didn't do it on December 14th. They, praise the Lord, nobody did their job. No judges looked at any of the evidence other than one little county in Michigan. No judges looked at anything, because, and that's a miracle, everybody. They were, whether they, I don't care why they didn't, whether they were afraid to be the first one. It was that God's had his hand in all this. That's a miracle. And, and otherwise, we wouldn't be up here talking. They would have stole this election, which they did, but our country was done forever. Now I'm going to tell you the next thing. The next miracle was the Senate seat runoffs in Georgia. And I'm going to tell you why that's a miracle. They stole both of them, too. Both the other ones won by over 100,000 votes, just so you know. But if I would have been marketing for them, I would have said, you know what? Give them a Republican so that they shut up about this election. Okay. And everyone's going, Mike, because I had churches praying around the world on the fourth that they would take them both, be greedy and take them both, which they did. So by taking them both, what did y'all feel that morning? You're going, oh no, now what are we going to do? And you would never let this go. Otherwise, so many people would have got complacent and went, oh, we'll get them back in 2022. There isn't going to be a 2022 or a 2024. It's 2020 is where we're at. 2020.
Mike Lindell is still confident that once he presents in the courts the evidence of his cyber expert team that he says is indisputable proof that communist China and other countries hacked voting machines across the country on Election Day 2020, and most importantly, electronically flipped enough votes in five of the key swing states that were cast for Trump and given to Biden to give Biden the election. And this despite all the other evidence of election fraud. But those vote flips alone, more than 500,000, Lindell says, were enough by themselves to throw the election to Biden. All right, now let's hear some excerpts from Rudy Giuliani's Common Sense podcast, episode 156, which I listen to on rumble.com, but it's also available elsewhere on the internet, including his Rudy's website. I think it's called rudysgiulianics.com. And in this episode, Giuliani, former mayor of New York City and a highly respected former federal prosecutor, interviews conservative commentator and radio and TV show host Glenn Beck. Please play soundbite 5.
I spend a lot of time now, which I never did before, either getting up in the middle of the night or waking up in the morning and not recognizing sometimes the country I'm in. When I read things like he puts out 26 or 28 executive orders to basically set out a Biden economic plan for about 20 private businesses that looks like the Stalin 5-year plan, the Mao 10-year plan. When did a president of the United States start putting out economic plans for the U.S.?
You know, this president is telling, and first of all, let me just say, it's an honor to hear those words coming from you, Rudy. We've known each other for a long time, but that's very kind of you to say those things. The important thing, and you know this, Biden is not running the show here. This is the third term of the Obamas. And he's, as Barack Obama has said himself, he's just finishing the job of the fundamental transformation. It's very telling to listen to what Joe Biden said before his speech in front of Congress a few weeks ago. When he was getting ready, he called the trusted members of the press in and he said, look, I know you're not going to agree with me on this, but, you know, the real test here is to see if a country like ours that is free like ours can compete against the authoritative countries like China as they come online. And he said, you know, a lot of people aren't sure. Well, he was just planting that seed of doubt. And he has said that several times now publicly. He even said it in that speech obliquely, but he said it in the speech. This is, you know, you and I have known big business people for a long time, and big business people have said for 20, 25 years, China is the model. And that's what's happening. We are being turned into a Chinese style state. The America that you and I grew up in, I fear, is gone. And unless we have some miracles and people peacefully stand up and we don't have any funny business with the next election or two, we may not be going back to something we recognize.
But how much worse is it than Carter, who I think up until Obama, I thought was the worst president. And now, and then Obama, and it seems like this is like a quantum leap beyond that.
This is the culmination of 100 years of work. This administration, I don't think if Joe Biden was in his right mind, he would be agreeing to all of the anti-American stuff that is happening right now. I mean, maybe he would, I don't know, but not the Joe Biden of 10 or 20 years ago. He wouldn't have been doing this. But this is a 100-year plan. I have a book, Rudy, from Stuart Chase. I don't know if you remember who Stuart Chase is, but he's the guy who coined the term the New Deal. And he was in the Roosevelt administration, and he wrote a book, When the War Ends, The Road We Are Traveling. And if you remember, that was the slogan of Obama's second run for the presidency, The Road We're Traveling. And I found that interesting because in the end of this particular book, it talks about how we're going to need many more studies before the mystery of this managerial revolution can be cleaned up. We have something we have to call now X, which is displacing the system of free enterprise all over the world. We don't know yet what to call it, but it is the road in which we're traveling. Now, listen to how they describe this. And he says in the book, this is the model for what America will become, and it's too late to change it. See if this sounds familiar. Free enterprise changed into System X, a strong centralized government, an executive arm growing at the expense of legislative and judicial arms, the control of banking, credit. I don't know if you saw last week, but they said they want to take the credit. Crazy. The underwriting of employment by the government, the underwriting of Social Security, the underwriting of food, housing, medical care, the use of deficit spending technique to finance the underwritings, the abandonment of gold, the control of foreign trade by the government, the control of natural resources, the control of energy sources, the control of transportation, agricultural production, the control of labor organizations, heavy taxation with special emphasis on the estates and incomes of the rich. Not much taking over of property or industries in the old socialistic sense. The formula will appear to be control without ownership and state control of communications and propaganda. He says it's too late to turn around. This is 1945. It's too late to turn around, and I don't know how long it'll take, but this is the seed that we have planted.
And that is the name of that, so people can get it.
This is called The Road Which We Are Traveling by Stuart Chase. It is something that they wanted to do with Wilson. They put some more in with FDR at this time. Then Obama really set the table, made the big change of healthcare, and now they're just finishing the plan. And they think that they are going to win. I've never seen a group of more arrogant people in my life.
This is just more evidence of these globalist business and government elites viewing communism and other socialist philosophies favorably and wanting to fundamentally transform the world into their vision of a unified global government with them controlling everything. It's really an old story in human history, the elites taking control. Today, these people view communist China as the model on which to force us all to emulate. It's safe to say that today there is a truly unholy alliance between the People's Republic of China and these capitalist elites with their trillions of dollars of fabulously enriching investments in the happily accommodating communist China. These fools believe that once the world is under communist domination, that they will remain in positions of power and influence and retain, perhaps even grow, their staggering wealth. To paraphrase the first Soviet communist leader, Vladimir Lenin, these elites are eager to destroy the substantially free market economic systems and governments that gave them their wealth and power. It's mind-boggling, but it's true. And they've been working behind the scenes to bring this about for the past century. You may be aware of the World Economic Forum of business and government elites that gather every year to plot the future of a world government model, essentially the same as that which I've just mentioned. If you know about the WEF, you may also be aware that last year that organization put out on its website a video in which it was stated, quote, within 10 years, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, end quote. This caused such an uproar. One commentator called it a, quote, blueprint for tyranny, end quote, that the video was taken down from the WEF website. But it's clearly indicative of what these monsters have planned for us. And the USA, with its penchant for free market capitalism and individual rights and freedoms, has been the chief obstacle to the globalist plan for world domination. Now that they've removed Trump and his team, they have no intention of allowing him to return to power. Let's hear some thoughts on this from Alex Jones of Infowars.com and his related websites. Jones is despised by the leftist establishment. I like to call them the mainstream Marxist mouthpiece media, who, as I said, stupidly believe that a totalitarian takeover of America will mean they will still keep their high incomes and valuable properties and possessions, those who have these, and their power and influence. And though reviled as a maniac and phony conspiracy theorist, Jones has often been largely correct, in my opinion, in his warnings and descriptions of the globalists and communist conspirators who seek, in one way or another, to enslave us. These comments are from Jones' radio show, July 15th. Play soundbite 6, please.
A lot of people wanted Tucker Carlson to weigh in on claims of election fraud 6-7 months ago, but he didn't do it. He said he was waiting until these detailed, hand-counted audits were done, and that he would then respond. And now he's come out and said the same thing we've all said. It's 100% private third-party groups that have confirmed that in Georgia and in Arizona and all over these places where Trump was winning right before, and then the polls close, and then he's still winning. And then they stop counting in the middle of the night, and then we all wake up, and suddenly, ladies and gentlemen, Biden had surged to the front and had been able to, quote, take the election. And the Republican Party establishment was then able to stand down, and the rest is history. Now, they are not about to let us try to reverse this. And in fact, they have a plan to bring in a permanent state of emergency and martial law using COVID as the cover and race war as the cover. And they have no intention of ever allowing the midterms to take place coming up in less than a year and a half. Now, if you'll remember, I said on this show and on Joe Rogan's show days before the election that Trump's going to win in these battleground states by an even bigger margin. And then after the polls close, they're going to say that Biden magically won because of mail-in ballots. Exactly what I said happened. And, you know, it wasn't very hard to predict that because the Democrats said no matter what happens, no matter what goes on, no matter what it shows, we're never going to accept Trump, and we'll even have our own convention, and we'll even have our own inauguration, and we'll just break the country up. That was in the New York Times with John Podesta, the chief strategist for the Democrats. And so they said, there's a red mirage. It'll look like he wins in a landslide. But don't worry. We'll produce whatever amount of mail-in ballots we need. He will not be the president. So they telegraphed their operation. They told the whole world what they were going to do. And now they did it. And they have no intention of letting the American people ever wrest control of our country back. This is a criminal takeover. This is a multinational corporate Chi-Com-backed coup. And no once-free country will ever come out of this again. We are turning into a high-tech version of North Korea. And I don't say that to be gloom and doom. I say that so you know how much trouble we're in. We told you this was coming. We warned you. We showed you what the UN was planning. We showed you what the universities were planning. We showed you their whole operation. They weren't spending trillions of stolen money to do this for nothing. George Soros wasn't buying off all the DAs and putting all his people in for no reason. They're going to arrest all their opposition, let their people commit murders everywhere, human trafficking, narcotics dealing. I mean, this is a well-thought-out criminal takedown. The FBI's control, the Justice Department, it's all shot. It's all gone. Country is gone. Now, I don't say that to be negative. I say that for you to realize that playing along with it and just interfacing with each issue as it comes, like they're not all connected, is going to defeat us. If we fully understand this is a UN world government takeover, Chi-Com-backed, if we fully realize they're even admitting that, we fully realize it's completely illegitimate, and we all speak out, and we don't comply, and we demonstrate, and we file lawsuits, and we start our own media organizations, and we all stop complying with civil disobedience, and just continue to get in their gaslighting faces and say, we know you're a fraud, we know you're a foreign multinational takeover, here are all the crimes you committed, you launched COVID-19, you suppressed the treatments, you censored the American people, you're a criminal organization, the public will completely break with them, and they will be defeated. They'll end up going to prison. If not, we are going into the long, dark night of hell on earth.
I ended that soundbite at that point of hell on earth, Jones being quoted. Right after that, he's continuing on his radio program and refers to globalists, George Soros, who I read got his start to becoming one of the world's most wealthy men with millions of dollars from the globalist European Rothschild banking dynasty. He also refers to the self-appointed world vaccine czar, who's more than double his fabulous net worth through investments in vaccine companies and so forth. Microsoft founder Bill Gates and billionaire investor Warren Buffett. And then Jones launches into a dire warning that the globalists want to rape your wife and burn down your house, he says, in their quest for world domination. Sound extreme? Preposterous? Well, you have to, as I see it, know how to read and interpret Alex Jones. Soros, Gates, Buffett, and the other globalist elites may not be personally calling for your or my personal destruction, but after all, isn't George Soros the main funder of almost every major leftist organization in the USA, along with those in other countries? I mean, according to Rudy Giuliani, Soros is the chief funder of the communist Black Lives Matter and Antifa movements, having given or pledged hundreds of millions of dollars to those organizations. Those were the ones who were doing most of the rioting, weren't they, last summer and last year across the country? We all know about the riots last year, the dozens of deaths, thousands of injuries, and property destruction in the billions. There's no doubt in my mind these things were meant as a message, a warning, a threat to us. Look at the horrific history of mass murder, slavery, and terror that communism has visited upon humanity. People say, oh, that would never happen here in the USA. Really? Remember the incredible power and wealth of the globalist elites are threatened and at stake here. At least that's the way they see it. You don't think a bloody, violent, Bolshevik-style revolution like those that took place in Russia, China, North Korea, Vietnam, Cuba, and elsewhere could possibly take place here in the U.S.? A cataclysmic military takeover in which we lose property, our freedom, and for many of us, our lives? I say you better think again. I sure do indeed hope and pray that such a thing never occurs here. But I also don't want to die a slave. And there would be resistance. It would be astoundingly bloody, destructive, and economically devastating for our oppressors as well as for us. It's amazing that despite the many years of leftist propaganda in our schools and popular culture, despite the billions poured into promotion of communism and other leftist ideology, Trump was still winning the election overwhelmingly. The left knew they couldn't win the election, so they planned and plotted and stole the 2020 election. And I strongly suspect they have been working at this for many years now, fraudulently influencing, if not outright stealing, other elections in the U.S. and across the globe. Remember what Stalin said. Those who cast the votes are nothing. Those who count the votes are everything. With our last soundbite, let's listen to more audio from the beginning of Patrick Byrne's speech, portions of which you heard earlier in this program, on July 18th at the Reawaken America Tour in Anaheim, California. This soundbite has excerpts from the beginning of Byrne's speech. It picks up just after Byrne has related that he was very ill with cancer in his 20s, but managed to survive and earn a PhD in philosophy from Stanford University. Excuse me. Byrne relates how he came to view the development of Western civilization with its embracing of rights and liberties for the individual over the absolute power of rulers and potentates who viewed and view themselves as godlike. This worldview, Byrne says, developed beginning with the Jews, as demonstrated with certain books of the Bible's Old Testament, through the Greeks and Romans and on to the Western Europeans, culminating with the U.S. Constitution. What's been happening since the 2020 elections, Byrne says, means we are in grave danger of, he says, being snuffed out as the pinnacle of Western civilization. If we don't turn this nightmare around, he adds, we could be plunged into 1,000 years of darkness. Please, soundbite 7, please.
Well, I started out in mathematical logic and economics and jurisprudence. I ended up in political philosophy and really wanting to understand the intellectual history of the U.S. Constitution. That really became my field. And I'm not going to dwell on it. I know you didn't come here to hear philosophy. But I'm going to spend just a minute to tell you the story that I used to teach. And in my view, the story, which explains what I'm doing here, fighting election fraud. And in my view, you know, it's kind of funny. The ancient Greeks, whenever they met people to the east, they all noticed this strange thing, that they understood themselves. They understood their rulers. And we're talking about the Persian Empire and such. They understood their rulers to be not like men such as themselves, but to be some other type of being with divine associations and such. And how strange that seemed to the Greeks, that they did not understand their rulers as men like themselves, but as some special and apart kind of being. Which means they really understood themselves to be slaves. If you don't understand that your ruler is a man such as yourself, essentially you're putting yourself in a position of a slave to a superior being. And it was from that is the world from which Abraham went forth. That's where it all began. That's, in my view, that's the thing from which Abraham went forth. That's the beginning of our tradition. And it starts there, the next big step. And I used to teach this in philosophy classes. Daniel, to me, the real beginning of the Western, I get like Flynn, I get verklempt when I think about this stuff. But the passion of the Western mind is how it's been expressed. Daniel is saying to King Balthazar, you've been judged in the balance and found wanting. That point of view, that the king is not some divine thing, but there is a balance within which political authority can be judged. There's political authority and there's moral authority. Just that distinction begins in the book of Daniel, and that has animated our history for 2,600 years. So I used to teach this history from Abraham and Daniel through, it's really Jerusalem, Athens, Rome. And you can, you know, how we develop, okay, this, our political philosophy moves from being understanding there's a difference between political authority and divine authority to therefore understanding that we men and should have a role in, you know, consent of the governed, as the Athenians developed. And then the Romans developed other ideas about splitting up. But so this wonderful history, which in my view reaches its apotheosis in the U.S. Constitution, it runs from, you know, from the Jews to the Greeks, to the Romans, to the English and the Dutch, and it reaches its great flourishing in the U.S. Constitution. And that became my field of study and understanding all that intellectual history. And I mention that because I think that this 26, 28, 100-year battle is about to be lost. I think what happened in November is we risk having lost this 2,800-year war because we're being snuffed out. Our tradition is about, and the whole world looks to us. If we go down to this, it could be 1,000 years of darkness. And the whole world that cares about freedom is looking to us. And if we go down to this, it may be the last act in a 2,800-year battle. So on that cheery thought, that's why I'm involved, Clay.
So first and foremost, we must fix our elections, clean up, and prevent in the future this horrible election fraud we have witnessed in 2020. And yes, I have no doubt, as do many millions of other Americans and people around the world, that what we witnessed was a huge, well-thought-out, and planned conspiracy to overthrow the duly elected constitutional government of the United States of America. If we can decisively expose this plot and fraud, bring the perpetrators to justice, and prevent such things from ever happening again, at least in the immediate future, then we can take back our country. That is, if we're not lost in a Bolshevik-style military takeover. This will be no easy task. But if we're going to survive as a nation and a civilization, we must absolutely clear out the appalling corruption within our government and society. This means getting the great majority of politically active Americans on board with us by exposing the truth about what happened last November and since. That's it for another show. As always, we hope you found the content of value. You can listen to a podcast of the show within the next few days on our webpage of The Jim Benson Show at bbsradio.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your day.